You know, the only time that leadership is important is when we disagree. See, if we never disagreed, or if we never had another opinion, or if we never thought it should be a different way, then leadership would not be important. So in reality, submission is the act of giving someone else the power to make a decision. That is what humility is in my life. I often do things that I'm asked to do by my superiors, not because I agree, but because they have that place and that role in my life. And in that, it makes me humble. Now, here's what Solomon says. He said, wisdom comes as the result of listening to people. And he continues to say, but he says, the foolish man thinks he is wise in his own eyes. Now, I'm going to start here this morning, and I don't know what it is, but sometimes as we get older and more mature, we like it when we tell stories about the mistakes and the awful things that young people do and how they don't listen, this thing and that thing. So I thought I would reverse all of that this morning and switch that around and talk about how it is that when we get to the place in our lives that we should stop driving. Yeah. In other words, instead of just focusing on how it is that younger people respond to decision, let's look at, clear out on the other thing. And this is one of the things that I've noticed. When the time comes for particular men to stop driving, it's something they will never see in and of themselves. Okay? They will never see this in and of themselves. There is no man that wakes up one day and says, you know what? I probably need to give up driving. No man ever says that. So every so often, I have somebody come to me, and they will say to me, hey, would you mind talking to my dad about giving up driving? I've had that in the last month or so. And I always say the same thing. Are you kidding me? Are you serious? I mean, first of all, he's not going to listen to me. And second of all, then he's going to hate me forever. Because we just don't listen to that kind of stuff. So here's what I'm saying to you. This day will come in your life, and you won't recognize it either. You will never think, you know what, I need to give up driving. So this is how you can identify what this will look like now. First of all, and I say this if you're around me very often, there comes a point in our lives that all of a sudden we are completely disoriented and we have no idea where we are. Now, if you're a younger person, that's probably never happened to you. As you get older, there will be a marker somewhere out there in which you will be disorientated and you will have no idea where you are, even though you have driven this path many, many times. Because driving is one of the most complicated things subconsciously. Subconsciously, it's a very complicated thing. It's like flying an airplane, really. I mean, you got all of these things that are going on inside of you, from speed limits to the route to what's going on all around you. And eventually, our brain processes information at different speeds. And as we mature, as we get older, it doesn't do that as quickly and as effectively as it once did. And all of a sudden, we're disoriented. That's marker number one. Marker number two, there are a series of fender benders in our life that begin to show up. All right? Just like never done this in our life, but maybe we're scraping the sides of the garage door now, just every so often. Or maybe we're backing up in the parking lot and we bump the car behind us at about $1,200 or $1,500 worth. All right? That's a warning signal. Another thing is, eventually someone else will offend you and say something about it. So why is it that we can see that in other people, but we can almost never see it in ourselves? So when we begin to talk about wisdom, we want to get to a place in our life that those things that we can't see or don't see or won't see are open to being fixed. So how do we do that? How do I get to that place in my life? How do I get to the place that I can accept people being involved in the decision-making process in my life, particularly when I don't see this. Have you ever been involved in something, particularly in a relationship in your life, and sort of as it begins to fall apart, you're going, why did I not see this coming? And what is ironic is everybody around you saw it. Everybody saw it. I mean, you've got this fiancé, and your mother says something to you one day, and you get all offended by this, and you know, like 3 or 4 years into the relationship, you're like, you know what? My mother was right, and mamas are right. Often. They can see things that we don't see. They feel things that we don't feel. And listen, they don't even have to be our mother. There are other people in our life that maybe they're just the person at work. Try this on for just a moment. I have friends. In fact, my best friends. I married their youngest daughter last year, and she was 28 years old. And they have another daughter that's 30, and she's not married yet. And they cannot understand why they will not get married. And now I want you to think about this for just a moment. Their parents make the house payments on the house where they live. They get both have two new BMWs. And anytime they need money, they come by the house and they get some. And this is the worst case of enabling I've ever seen. I mean, like, why would you ever get married? Why would you ever get out on your own? And listen, I can see that so easily. I mean, I'm just like, how can you not see this? This guy's my best friend, and if I would say to him, listen, I think you're the worst enabling parent I've ever seen in my life. We all know that, though. We all know those people. I mean, listen, you could do a better job with your neighbor's kids than they do. I mean, you can see it. So why is it that we can't see that about ourselves? It's because we become emotionally attached. We become emotionally attached. We become emotionally charged in an environment. Do you see that? Emotions make the obvious less obvious. I think of emotions in decision-making as fog. See the ship? Big ship. Probably a lot of stuff on there. Probably a powerful ship. But you know what? Making decisions saturated with emotions makes things less obvious. Now, emotions have a place in our life. They're important. In fact, they are what energizes. They are what make us compassionate. They are the energy of love. They can be angry at times. All of this is a part of what I think of as emotional fog. And our emotions make bad decisions in our life. And so you see, when I am saturated with emotion in some relationship or some situation in my life, how am I ever going to be able to see beyond that? Think about it for a moment. Financially, when we become emotionally attached to an idea financially, have you ever been able to disconnect from that? I mean, I think about some of the things that I have done financially in my life, and honestly, I was so in love with an idea. I was so in love with the object. I was so emotionally attached to the romance that surrounded this that I could not see anything else but this. And you know, I could look at your life and I could make financial decisions for you and they would be perfect. Ever noticed in the grocery store how anything that is attractive to children is on the bottom two rows? And so, you go in the grocery store and the kid grabs whatever this is and you say, no, put that back. And the kid starts crying and then it's like everybody's looking at you and all of this attention is being brought to you and you don't like that. And so you do one of two things. You either say, no, we're not doing that, or okay, come on, let's get it, let's get out of here. In other words, once we become emotionally involved in something, our ability to make good decisions is almost gone. It's almost gone. This week, I went to see my brother. My sister-in-law last Friday was diagnosed with uterine cancer out of nowhere. Just out of nowhere. So Wednesday, I got on a plane and flew to Michigan to see my brother. And Thursday morning, I got on a plane and came back. 24 hours. And when I got back, Joy had gone to watch the grandkids in Lynchburg, so she wasn't there. And when I got back, it seemed to me that our little dog got so excited that it started choking. And he can do that, and she can do that. And so I kind of paid attention to it the rest of the evening. But about 4 o'clock in the morning, it had never moved off the end of the bed where it sleeps, kind of at the end of my feet. And I thought, well, you know what? This is not right. Because usually she's up and down. He had not moved. He was laying right in the same spot. And so I got up and turned the light on. He didn't get up. And so I get down there and his face, and of course, you know, I say, are you okay, honey? You know how you do. You got a different voice when you talk to the dog. And he didn't raise his head. He didn't do any of that. He just opened his eyes. And his eyes said, no, I feel bad. And I'm still talking to him. Are you going to be okay? Or I heard you coughing last night. Is something wrong? And so, you know, I'm talking to him. He doesn't move. He doesn't get up. Doesn't do anything. So I go in the kitchen and get chicken out of the refrigerator, and that usually you can just hear the refrigerator door open, and he's in there. Didn't move. He's got to be sick. He's got to really be sick, and I love this dog. I love this dog. And so it's like 4:30 right now, and I text Joy, and I said, when you can, give me a call. And boom, she calls me right back. It's 4:30 in the morning now. She said, what's wrong? I said, well, Alex hasn't gotten up out of the bed yet. And I said, I was talking to him, and I said, he still didn't get up, got chicken out, and he still didn't get up. All he did is open his eyes. She said, well, do you think there's something wrong? I said, I don't know, but I'm taking him to the emergency vet. It's 4:30 now. So I load him up, take him to the emergency vet. And I get there, and I tell them the symptoms, and they said, well, we'll look at it. So they take him back there, and I'm in the treatment room, and the veterinarian comes in and says, you know what? His blood pressure, his heart rate, his temperature, everything's fine. But she said, I could run an x-ray just to make sure if you want me to. Run the x-ray. Run the x-ray, she comes back, and she says, I did the x-ray and everything looks fine. It looks fine, looks great. I can't find anything wrong with him. And I said, well, okay, I'll take him home. How much will that be? $300. $300 worth of checking out here, okay? And you see, here is what happened. There is an emotional attachment. Oh, let me tell you what the doctor said. I said, well, what do you think the problem? She said, I really think it's a lot of drama. Okay, now put me back in my place here. So, and she said exact that. She said, I really think this is a lot of drama. And $300 worth of drama. But listen, I'm emotionally attached to this dog. And you know, when your kids grow up and they move away and they're gone and you don't get to see your grandkids very often, these little things become your dogs, okay? And I'm emotionally just so involved in this dog's drama. I mean, he's playing me. $300 worth. He's playing me here. So I get him up, and I take him back home. And honestly, you know, like, it's just like with your kids in the emergency room. On the ride home from the emergency room, they seem fine. They're great, you know. And so I think to myself, and I get home, and I call Joy, and she said, well, how much was it? It was $312. Well, what'd she say? She said it was drama. I can't imagine that it was drama. See, once we have this emotional attachment, our ability to make effective decisions goes away. What if it's your wife or your boyfriend or your fiancé or you're 27 years old, you're not married yet, and you fall in love? You're absolutely blind to making effective decisions because emotions cloud all of that. With your kids, they cloud all of that. Listen, I'm not saying this just because it's my kids, but I think he's one of the most intelligent. That's who we are. We can't help that. So here's what Solomon says. He says, wise people seek the counsel of other people. Well, they may say something I don't like. That's the whole idea. See, that is the whole idea. Now, I've never had my best friend ask me for my opinion about his parenting skills. He's never asked me. I don't know that I would tell him what I thought, even if he did. Now, am I not a good friend? I want to stay a friend, okay? Once we have these emotional attachments, our ability to make effective decisions just diminishes proportionally. What is the wise thing? Wise people listen to others. Solomon asks, he says, seek others' counsel. You see, the people around me had a better ability to assess the dog than I did. Really, it did. They do. I probably could make better financial decisions in your life than what you do, and you probably can make better financial decisions for me because there is no emotional attachment. A wise man will hear an increase in learning. A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. So when you get to the place in your life that you're going to make a big decision that you're emotionally connected to, I want you to stop right there and say, what is the wise thing? What is the wise thing? And then I want you to listen to the counsel of other people. See, you don't want to discover after you've been a teacher for 3 or 4 years, you hate this. And I promise you, there's somebody in your life right now that can say to you, you know what? I'm not sure that's what you would like to do the rest of your life. There's somebody that can do that. And in turn, listen to those people. Listen. And this is what it says, the way of the fool is wise in his own eyes. You've met this person. They're always right. Always. You've said, you know, in heated discussion before, are you always right? Well, yeah, I am. You know that person. In their own eyes, they're always right. Here's what Solomon says. When you find yourself in this situation, stop and seek and listen to the counsel of other people. Now, this is the wisest human being that has ever lived, and he's saying, I need to seek the counsel of other people in some things. And so do you. So do you. our lives sometimes become so overwhelming, so chaotic. People pull us into all of their drama and chaos because it's difficult for us to make decisions apart from our emotional connection. Jesus had the ability to love people unconditionally and still speak the truth to them. I have a granddaughter that will be 16 this week. And some of you met John and Tammy. They've been here, they've taught, and they're incredible parents. And they have this saying, "Let me speak truth into your life." That's a nice way of saying, "Hey, let me just be honest with you here." One day, Tammy said that she was saying to Landon, who's almost 16, "Landon, I want to be able to speak truth into your life." And Landon says, "Mom, I want to be able to speak truth into your life." All of us naturally sort of resist that. But wise people listen anyway. They listen anyway. They even seek it to enable them to be and make wise decisions. It's not easy. But I promise you, in the end, it's better. Bow your heads with me, please. Father, I pray that you will enable us, that you will empower us to be the people that you want us to be. God, as I need to be humble and listen to other people, to ask other people, to seek the counsel of other people, empower me to do that. In your name, amen.